listening to Real Talk SLP with your host, Felice Clark, the Doubling Speechy. This is a show to help speech pathologists navigate the SLP world with real-life stories to celebrate therapy successes and how to persevere when failure comes knocking on your door. This is the Real Talk SLP podcast show, and I am your host, Felice Clark, the Dabbling Speechy. You are listening to episode number 4. And today we are going to be talking about something that I am pretty passionate about. I love using themes when planning my therapy for students. It has changed the way I look at therapy. It's helped me with my mixed groups, and it really has taken the overwhelm out of planning for my caseload. So I had to bring on my girl, Whitney Smith from Let's Talk with Whitney SLP, because she is the queen of using themed-based therapy, and she keeps me inspired with all of her fun ideas that I see on Instagram. So you can find her on social media at Let's Talk with Whitney SLP. Whitney is a school-based SLP working in Georgia. And today she's going to be talking about how to plan effective speech and language activities using themes. So before we get started on our conversation, I'd like to welcome Whitney, and I'm super glad to be chatting with you today.
Hey, Felice. I'm so excited to be here today to talk about something that is just really near and dear to my heart. I love themes. They've worked really well for me over the years, and I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. Have you always been in the schools?
For the most part, I started off in the schools, and then when I relocated from Florida back to my hometown in South Georgia, I went to work at our local hospital for about a year, both inpatient and outpatient, mostly outpatient pediatrics. And then when a school position opened, that's kind of where my heart is. So I jumped on that, and I've been back in the schools ever since.
I'm a school girl too. I've always been in the schools, and I've tried a little bit of private practice, and I really do like the school setting because I think themes and curriculum-based therapy match really well with the classroom. So
yeah, for sure.
So I want to know what, if you agree with me on this, but I think there's kind of two SLP camps when it comes to theme therapy. There's either SLPs that love theme therapy and do it all the time, or they're just like, I don't have time for this. This is not my cup of tea kind of thing.
For sure. I definitely think that, or from what I hear, there are two different camps. And I guess my thing is that, you know, themes can be whatever you want them to be. They can be super, super elaborate, or they can be super easy. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later. But I just think that they don't have to be as time consuming as everybody thinks that they are.
I would agree with you. Could you share a little bit about how you got started with using themes in your therapy lesson plans? Like, did you start out the gate doing themes, or...
You know, it's interesting. When I was in graduate school, I was seeing a student in our kind of graduate program, speech program, and I had a little boy who had been in and out of foster care and was very delayed with vocabulary development. And one of my professors at the time, that was kind of overseeing me, supervising me in the clinic, suggested that I do themes, and I had never really thought about that before, but she helped me come up with several themes that he, as a little four-year-old boy, would enjoy. And I kind of came up with this idea of doing what I call therapy in a box. And so I just bought these, you know, plastic tubs from Walmart or somewhere, and I would fill them up with little trinkets or books or stickers or activities that went along with whatever theme we were going to be working on that week. And I used the dollar store, the Target dollar spot, Walmart, Michael's, Ben's, anything like that, just to fill up those bins. And so I just saw so much progress with this student in such a short period of time. And I was really super hooked. It was really, really easy once I had prepped them to prepare. And those therapy in a boxes went with me to my first school placement. And they continued to grow and grow. And now my themes don't fit in those super, super small little plastic tubs anymore. I had to get much bigger plastic tubs for my themes. But I still, from time to time, will pull out those therapy in a boxes for when I'm, you know, when I need to talk about a specific theme or whatever, because they just go so far for so many kids on my caseload.
That's cool. I haven't. I kind of do the same thing, but I've been putting them in pouches, and then I stick them in a bin after I'm done with them. But so did you just let the student pick what he wanted to like do first? So you just put the bin out and then you grab the book if he wants the book. Okay, we're going to read the book. Is that how you kind of did it?
Yeah. So a lot of them have, they actually had like little objects in them. So if we were doing animals, for instance, then they had plastic animals that I had bought. And of course he loved that. He's a little boy. And, so then we would, we read a book about animal. There's a puzzle in there just, with different animals on it. And I think it was a Melissa and Doug one that made the animal sound so we could practice it. And I had a plastic fence in there with the animals so that we could take the animals in and out and practice prepositions that way, spatial concepts and things. And then as that theme grew, then we would split them off into now I have a farm animal and an ocean animal and a zoo animal. But yes, so we would take turns kind of playing with the different toys that were in the box. Definitely incorporate a book. I love my books and therapy. And then we would end the day with him picking out stickers, or maybe we would do an art and craft that was based on that theme. So just kind of they're designed to spend as much time on them or as little time on them as you have. So there were times where I knew that I really wanted to get this project done, and I was not just going to dump the whole box out and let him do whatever in order, you know, for him to not be distracted. But then there were other times where I just was kind of a free for all and said, what do you want to play with today? And we can get a lot of language out of play-based therapy too. So was great.
That's cool. Yeah, I've been reading some research lately that said it can take students with speech and language impairments 24 engagements with a word before it becomes mastered. So I've been doing my themes longer than a week. Now, like pirate theme week, we do that for a week because and sometimes, I mean, you can drag it out. Kids love pirates, so you could actually do it for two or three weeks if you really wanted to. But so fall is my jam. Fall and winter are my – well, I would say fall, winter, and spring are my jam. And so I just started using those themes for longer periods of time. And as I've built up a therapy material base, I've been able to really – you know, grab and go, but it was a process. And I would say that's a big roadblock for a lot of newer SLPs. Money and actually getting the materials does take time. But so that's what I've been doing, is trying to stretch out a theme longer and try to adapt the activities just a little bit so the kids feel like it's a little bit new, but it really isn't. And it's been going really well. I've been trying to do that more this year, actually, with my themes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and there are kind of at the beginning of every year, sometimes over the summer, I take our school calendar and kind of go through and count up the weeks. And I just develop a kind of like a lesson plan for all of my themes for the year. And there are a lot of them that we do for two, sometimes 3 weeks at a time. I always end the school year with our beach or ocean theme. And I usually do that for 3 weeks. It's just because there are so many of my favorite books involve that theme. There are so many different activities that we can do. And I kind of go all out for that one because it's kind of towards the end of the school year. So I transform my speech room into kind of an under the sea experience with lots of different decorations. And I don't do that all the time for, you know, throughout the school year for all the different themes. But I do that some. It's kind of a great way to end the school year, I think, and the kids absolutely love it. It keeps them really engaged for several weeks. But you're right, it doesn't have to be, we don't have to, you know, change themes every week. And most of the time we don't. A lot of things we carry for 2 weeks at a time, sometimes even longer. And then those shorter ones, like you said, like Pirate Week, we only do for 1 week too. But the other thing that I really try hard to do is to, because of the research that you noted earlier in students needing to hear those vocabulary words so many more times than just what a week would allow. If I'm really focusing on a concept, I try to bring those general concepts back and kind of reintroduce those no matter what theme we're talking about. So some of the vocabulary might be different, but the basis and what we're learning is similar. One of those concepts that I use a lot is true-false. And so with almost all of my themes, I really like to incorporate some nonfiction into them also. And so I can carry that that true-false theme through multiple different themes, if that makes sense.
What is true-false?
You know, like if just the concept of I'm going to make a statement and you tell me if this is true or if this is false.
Oh, false. Okay. I thought you said fault. I was like,
Sorry. Yeah. True and false. And just getting them to be able to recognize that concept that might be, especially for some of my students, a harder concept to grasp. But then if we work on it throughout several themes, then it's a lot easier for them instead of just, you know, doing it for one theme for a week.
Yeah, and I think it also accesses their, especially the seasonal themes like fall and winter, mm-hmm. it accesses their background knowledge and what they've mm-hmm. already experienced, or it kind of brings to light, like, you should be looking at the trees outside and watching them change colors. So I think that's another reason why I like using theme therapy is it accesses and teaches them to be more aware about background knowledge. And then they can come, if I was able to connect with parents, the parents could film them eating Thanksgiving dinner, you know, or all the things they do. And then they could bring it back into the therapy room. If you have a good relationship with parents to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the big roadblocks SLPs face with planning theme therapy or why they may not want to start. And then some, you've already shared a lot of solutions for why they should do it, but, or if you've had any roadblocks yourself with themes.
Yeah, I think the thing about themed therapy is that you just kind of need to come at it with the mindset that you do what you have time for. You can do, like I said earlier, as little or as much as you want. They can be as simple or as elaborate as you want them to be. And there are times where, throughout the year, I don't have time to get everything together on the day that I'm supposed to start that theme. And so we push it back and we just do a random activity that we pull off the shelf that day. And the kids are so easily adaptable. They're happy to do that. They're happy to shake it up a little bit. So, if you get behind and if you have a week where you didn't stick with a theme or, you know, you didn't have things prepped, then I think it's totally fine to not, you know, have to stick with themes, you know, every single time or every single week of the school year. I know a lot of SLPs say that it's really hard to, you know, find the time to plan. I do like to plan my themes out in advance, and I try really hard to kind of stay 3 to 4 weeks ahead in terms of what I'm prepping. Me personally, Sundays are my prep day. And so I spend an hour or two on Sundays just kind of getting ready for the week. And that might mean pulling out my, themed box that's coming up in the next couple of weeks and just kind of giving it a look through and seeing what I need to, you know, pull out or kind of what I would need to prep over the next couple of weeks and planning for that theme so that I'm not kind of waiting until the last minute on the Sunday before I'm supposed to start a theme on Monday and then getting behind. But there are times that works perfectly and there are times where life happens and it doesn't, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. I'm really, you know, super flexible. I think as SLPs, we have to be. And there are times, too, where I spend a lot of time planning a theme and then, oh, I get pulled for, you know, a meeting or I get pulled for state testing that lasts 4 days and I missed, you know, part of that theme that I was so excited and totally prepared for. And when that happens, I just push it back. I figure out, you know, how I can make it a little bit longer. I feel like I figure out how I can make another theme that's coming up a little bit shorter. And sometimes I ask the kids, do you guys want to do, you know, another week of this, or do you want to go on to something else? And they, you know, usually have really strong opinions about which themes are their favorite. And so they're happy to jump in and have that too. the other thing is that it can be pricey if you're going out and you're buying everything for a theme at one time. I kind of didn't take that approach. I've just kind of gathered materials over the years, and I think that if you've been a school-based SLP for a long time, you probably have a much bigger repertoire of materials than if you're just in grad school or if you've just recently graduated, and that's totally okay. There are a lot more materials and a lot more options out there now than there were when I graduated, or when I was going through graduate school. There was no Teachers Pay Teachers, and there was no Pinterest, and there was no Target dollar spot, if you can believe it. And so I think that you just kind of have to know that, you know, I'm constantly thinking about, you know, therapy. And if I'm out shopping and I see something, I say, oh, I might need that. Or if I'm, you know, looking around yard sales or thrift shops or Goodwill, or, you know, when some friend is cleaning out their kid's toy bin, then they know to kind of call me and ask me and let me come give it a look through really quick. So I think that there are definitely options out there for you to repurpose things, for you to get things at that are not super expensive, and kind of just build those up over time. It's not going to happen overnight.
I agree. And I graduated as well pre-Pinterest, and we just had the therapy closet. So that was, you know, it's all the things I've went through throughout my career. I kind of go, okay, God, thanks for reminding me that this was for a reason, that I had to sit here going, what the heck am I going to do? Because you get real creative when you have the farmhouse out and you're like, okay, let's see how we can get all these goals met here in this group today. So I totally get it. And I agree about, if you're on a budget to, well, you know, you can go on TPT and get your book companions, and you pretty much are set for a theme. I would say that would be my biggest recommendation, is to invest in books. But now you can even get books on YouTube. I still think it's better to read them out loud. But when I'm in a pinch, or I don't have the book, or I'm bills have been paid and there's only enough for food for the rest of the month. on Tuesday, that's what I did. I don't have... 'Twas the night before Thanksgiving, and I just used a YouTube read aloud. But
yeah,
I would start with themes, buying the books, because then you can get the book companions on Teachers Pay Teachers, or make them yourselves. Mm-hmm. And then you can slowly, that's how I plan. I pick the book or the theme, and then I look at all the goals that my kids have, and I'll pick and choose activities for them. So I would probably buy toys like farmhouse. I'm like, what are other good toys that are good for themes?
You know, I anything that is super interactive, love a farmhouse, love a doctor kit, a vet kit. Recently, because I have preschool, so 3-year-olds all the way up through 5th grade. And I have a lot of self-contained classrooms in there too. And so we're doing a lot of play-based therapy. I start my mornings for several hours in the morning. I do a lot of play-based therapy. And I was trying to figure out a way where I could incorporate things into that. You know, that's where I pull sensory boxes and stuff like that in, but then also dramatic play centers. And so recently, leading up to Thanksgiving, we've been talking a lot about food and family and what we're thankful for. And so we used a lot of play food over the last, couple of weeks in preschool getting ready for Thanksgiving. And so I would definitely say that play food is one of those must have toys too. And a lot of things, I guess I carry a lot of stuff back and forth because I have a 5-year-old at home too, and then a 1-year-old. So when they're finished with a toy, it gets, you know, and it gets repurposed for my therapy closet after that. But you know, the neat thing about themes therapy. Well, and I guess let me add this: if there's another passion that I have besides theme therapy, it's literacy and therapy. And there's almost never a therapy session that I have that does not incorporate a book. It's just so, so, so important. And so I'm like you. I definitely have books in for all of my themes. I also like using the actual book, but then there are times where, just like you, we do YouTube, or sometimes I'll have it on the iPad. But it's so important for them to be able to carry that theme through, not just with the toys, but also with literacy. And I'm finding that more and more parents get really excited about theme therapy too, because if I can tell them ahead of time what theme we're working on, they have just been so wonderful about carrying that theme over at home, asking, you know, questions about that theme, talking about vocabulary. And I have a lot of parents that'll even ask me what books we're reading, and they want to buy similar books or the same books so that they can go home and, you know, read those books with their kids too. So that's been awesome for carryover also.
How do you communicate with your parents?
So I have a newsletter that goes out, every 9 weeks with our progress reports. And I just kind of put on that, the upcoming themes, just so they'll know. I have a lot of parents that follow my Instagram account. And so they know that, and they have been so, happy with that, because they get to see what their kids are doing. You know, I go through it too. I have a 5-year-old. She comes home from kindergarten. I'm like, "What'd y'all do today?" And she's like, "We went to recess." And I'm like, "Okay, but what did you learn today?" So they're loving being able to see exactly what we're doing, or watch the kids make a craft, or see what book we're reading, or see what theme we're doing. So, and then, you know, I have parents that text or call or send me emails or whatever too. But for the most part, they really rely on those newsletters that go home to kind of tell them what theme's coming up, and they've enjoyed kind of playing a role in that too.
Yeah, I started sending home newsletters the last 2 years. I've been doing a lot of push-in therapy, and that's how I plan mm-hmm. themes. And then I check in with the teacher and see what they're doing, and then I plan around, or I'm like, "What do you want to do?" It's a collaboration. And because I'm doing push-in and covering everybody's goals for 50 to 60 minutes, it's opened up that some time for me to go in the classroom and see what kind of visual supports I might need to make the teacher. And that's kind of how I got buy-in. I was like, "I'll make you stuff." And it's a better model for me, because the kids are getting the same themes at 3 different stations, because she lets me use her aids and herself, and she helps me run the class. And mm-hmm. And so it's opened up some time for me to go talk to them too, because a lot of times we say, "Oh, I don't have time to collaborate with the teachers," and I totally get it. But if you collaborate mm-hmm. a little bit, you might even be able to see what they're doing in their curriculum. And that happened to me last year. She was doing bats, and it came in October, and it was perfect because I don't do Halloween in my schools very often unless they're, you know, okay with it. And so I did mm-hmm. bats, and I would never have thought to do bats. And I was able to use their curriculum and then add on a couple little things, but it wasn't that time consuming for me.
Yeah. Collaboration is so important with the classroom teachers. And for my preschool classrooms, they actually, their state curriculum is theme-based. And so I don't necessarily always follow my own theme with them. I kind of go along with what they're doing. A lot of their themes are so similar to what I would do anyway. And so I just kind of, for them, go along with that. So just like you said, they're getting it with me, they're getting it with the classroom teacher, they're getting it with sometimes even OT and PT will jump on board and carry on a similar theme with whatever they're doing. And so it's very beneficial, not only for the student, but then also for us, because we can pull ideas from each other, and it just kind of cuts that prep time down, because I don't have to prep everything. We're splitting it up, you know, and everybody's kind of helping. And then in terms of my other classroom teachers, it is so important to ask them kind of what they're doing. I know for my older students, 4th and 5th grade, that's probably one of the most popular questions that I get is, how do you do theme therapy with 4th and 5th graders or with your older students? And do they ever feel like that it's too babyish, or, you know, whatever? And I think that honestly, what I've found is that they love it just as much as the other kids. It's kind of like a break from them, from having to sit in the classroom and learn about things all day that they might not find as interesting. But these are things that they do have a little bit of background.
You're cutting out a little bit. Your internet connection is unstable. What does that mean? Hold on.
Hey,
can you hear me? Shoot, it's saying my internet is all. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay, yeah, so.
I can now.
Okay, you might have to start over a little bit. You were shooty patootie. Okay. Dang it. I don't know what happened there. I think it was my internet.
That's okay. Can you hear me now?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, so.
So collaborating with teachers, with themes, that's kind of what we were talking about. Okay.
Okay, so are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's so important really to collaborate with all your teachers about kind of your themes. And I try really hard to do that. It doesn't have to be something that I spend a lot of time on, just a couple of minutes to check in with them and let them know kind of what I'm thinking and what they're working on too. Probably one of the most popular questions I get asked is how I incorporate themes into my older kids, like my fourth and fifth graders, or even sometimes third graders. And some people worry that maybe it might be a little bit too babyish for them. And what I've found is that my students really love the themes as much as my younger students do. It's kind of a break from them because they're sitting in class all day learning about things that they don't already know about or that they might not find as interesting. But these are things that are a little bit more interesting and engaging and interactive. And a lot of them do have some background knowledge on these topics. And so for students, especially my students that are really language impaired, these themes make them feel somewhat successful right off the get-go because they have a little bit of information already. And so they are able to just kind of jump right in and tell me what they already know and then learn some different things with that. And I just kind of tailor my activities based on the age and the ability level. I'm, definitely not going to make a fifth grader do something that's super babyish like I'm doing with my preschool kids. And I want it to also be challenging to them, but I can target comprehension with almost, with any theme. I can target grammatically correct sentences or writing or anything that we have. And so, and vocabulary is super important. And a lot of these students that I have, they might have some vocabulary, but they don't have all the vocabulary. And so I really try to just kind of figure out what they're doing in the classroom. And if there's any way that I can incorporate that into my themes, then I am absolutely going to give that a go and try to do it. It makes that that collaborative effort just kind of carry through, and it makes it a lot better for the kids because they're getting it across multiple settings.
Mm-hmm. And I actually did theme therapy with my middle school students. With my life skills classes, it's way easier to get buy-in. And I was fortunate that I taught 2 days a week. I taught the whole period, but I had 20 to 24 kids in the class with one of the teachers had prep and the other one was running the class because that's what they did. They did a functional life skills period and then, or a the learning piece of functional life skills. And then another period, they were doing practical hands-on things like folding mm-hmm. clothes and doing things for around the school. So I had four or five aides and a teacher, and we did theme therapy. And then I used the same themes with my kids with language disorders that came to see me too, because it made it easier to plan. But so I just thought, if they're at a first grade level or a kindergarten level, what skills would I be targeting with my kindergarten students? But I made it feel adult and respected them as their teenagers, even though cognitively they may be at that level. And so right. So I just tried to make it less babyish feeling, but it was still the same concept. And then with my older students, for fall, we did apples, and we watched nonfiction YouTube videos about why mm-hmm. apples, turn brown. And so it's all in how you present it. And I have done themes like that. So before we end, I'd love it if you shared some, a sample lesson plan or something that you think SLP should do for winter with the winter theme. You're in pre-K to fifth grade. So maybe kind of go how you would do preschool, K-2, and then 3-5 or something. That's kind of how I plan too. I'll do a winter theme for everybody, but I just space out the activities or pick different books.
Yeah, for sure. So leading up to Christmas break, we do a couple of weeks of Christmas activities. And then when we come back from winter break or Christmas break, I go more into like actually the season of winter. And part of that is because my location in South Georgia, like it's, I'm in shorts and a t-shirt today. Like it's definitely not feeling like winter down here. Our winter more so starts in January. But when we come back from the break in January, I always start with an Arctic and Antarctic theme. And I kind of do Arctic 1 week and Antarctic the next week, but we kind of have some carryover into those. And we just really talk about, you know, the different animals that are associated with both of them. And one of the books that I use for that is Pierre the Penguin. It's one of my favorite books that I use all year. It's a nonfiction story about an African penguin. And I use him because we're talking about penguins anyway. A lot of the students think that all penguins live in ice. That's not actually true. African penguins like to be in warmer climates. But that kind of just gives them even more background knowledge that not all penguins are the same. There are definitely different types of penguin species. But with the Pierre the Penguin book, I use that book companion. I have both a prep companion and now a no prep companion where it's just print and go, that are available on Teachers Pay Teachers. But, we target depending on the age, and the ability level of the students, we're targeting things like vocabulary, you know, repetition of sentences, writing comprehension, sequencing, basic concepts, just all of the different goals of the students that are on my caseloads, I'm targeting with that one book. We do a penguin art and craft for the younger kids, and also do a different book, another nonfiction book called Newt the Polar Bear. My older kids absolutely love that one. Both of them are kind of about the importance of taking care of animals. Both of these animals are kind of in a zoo or a museum setting, and they have a problem, and their handler helps them solve the problem. So we also, with that, kind of with both of those books, carry on a discussion about the importance of protecting our environment, taking care of animals. I really like to teach my older kids the importance of debating appropriately and using those critical thinking skills. And so we always, during this time, have a debate on whether or not animals should be in captivity. And I try really hard not to kind of tell them my opinion. I just kind of give them the different sides and then let them kind of debate back and forth on that based off of these two books, which is always a lot of fun. And so winter is one of my favorite things to do. After the Arctic and Antarctic units, we do kind of like an overall general just winter season theme where we talk about snow, and we use the book, the Mercer Mayer Little Critter book, Just a Snowman, and you know, do different activities with that. We have a snowball fight with fake snowballs that the kids, no matter what their age, love it. So there's just a lot of different things. This year, I'm adding a different week in there. I'm adding a Yeti week during the winter that all the kids are really excited about. So I just, you know, it's one of my favorite things to do. I try to kind of switch it up a little bit every year. It's not, you know, the exact same because I have these kids sometimes from 3 years old all the way to fifth grade. And so I don't want them to get bored doing the same thing over and over and over again. But I do kind of try to repeat things occasionally so that that helps them as well.
Cool. That's really good. I used Tacky the Penguin. I love penguins too. You can get tubes. They're called tubes, and you can get a tube full of penguins. Uh-huh. And I make a sensory bin, and that is really good. So I'm going to have to add that book you said, Pierre the Penguin, which would also be a great theme for all those Southern Florida SLPs who are like, we like to stay in the warm water too.
yes, so true.
We get four seasons out here. I get to drive to Tahoe for the snow and then come home to my 50 degree weather. But I was going to say, for me, some things that I did with my middle school students for winter was I found America's Funniest Home Videos, winter version, and I think there's about three of them on YouTube, and I use those for all, I use them for, like, what would you say if your friend fell in the snow? So that would be social skills. We had to sit in groups and discuss our opinions about the video, which one we liked, which one was funny to us. They had to talk about the vocabulary, summarize what happened, and then we also made predictions about what might happen next. So using the clues from the video. And what else did I do with – oh, for your life skills classes, you could make hot cocoa.
Oh, yes. We've done that. And then, like, even s'mores. So love cooking in the classes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Oh, and then I was going to say one more thing that I do. And I've done this with younger grades all the way up to middle school, was you can bring in cookies, sugar cookies, and have students decorate a cookie for the other person. And so it's a thinking of you one, and you could, I do that one in February and in December, because February is like Valentine's Day. So it's all about thinking about other people. And then December I do it. Well, not, I don't do it every month or every year in December, but I will, that's another one I'll go and do if the teacher doesn't want to do something else. Like last year we did those cinnamon applesauce ornaments. And I'm sure older kids would like to do that if you present it in a way that was like, this is for your little sister, you know, for family member or something, or for your Christmas. I'm sure they would. It's all about how you present it.
That's so true. I've never had one of my older students tell me that they didn't want to do an activity, or they thought it was too babyish, or, you know, something like that. They get really excited about doing these things, and I've just had really great buy-in from them all along, just like you said, because it's about the way that you present it. So, and the other thing I was going to add is I think that, and I touched a little bit on this earlier, but I think that when you're thinking about themes, your themes can be fluid. You can, you know, do a theme earlier in the year and then come back to that theme and do it a little bit different later on in the year. I do that with seasons a lot and weather, because weather changes with each season. So I do a unit. I usually always plan a weather unit in September, towards the end of September, at the beginning of the year. But then I always come back to weather when the seasons change from winter to spring, because it's such a great idea to talk about the changes in the weather and the different types of weather. And so, and then because we're kind of in a hurricane prone area, we always, you know, it's very functional for our kids to learn about these, you know, kind of more extreme weather events during the beginning of the year. But then we touch on weather again later on, but it's just more kind of focused on the changing of the seasons and, you know, things like that. So just because you've done a theme at one point in the year doesn't mean that you can't come back to that and do a little bit more on it later on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I have to show my kids what a hurricane is on YouTube. Praise the Lord, we don't have them here in California.
Yeah, we don't have earthquakes.
Yeah, and the fires right now are, you know,
oh my goodness.
It's like weather is around us everywhere. But yeah, I agree with what the weather, and I use weather theme a lot during, and you can even break it down. Like, we're going to talk about hurricanes this week. It doesn't have to be all weather, and you could get really good at that. And that'd be a really good theme for your older kids. So thanks, Whitney, for sharing about how you do themes and breaking it all down. I think it really will help SLPs feel less overwhelmed and more willing to take some risks in trying to do them. And I would agree with what Whitney said, to start small and build. And one of my things that I did was, when I had 80 kids on my caseload, I planned a theme, and the 8 o'clock group, it went okay. And then 8:30, it got even better. And then by 9 o'clock, I was like, I got this. So you have to take risks. You have to mess up. Or you see what kids are talking about and you're like, ooh, that was super good right there. I'm going to keep using that. And so that's what I think. With, if the more you do themes, the easier they get. And then you might be like Whitney and I and be obsessed with them.
That's so true.
All right.
Well, now that I've done them, I can't go back. Like, it, I'm theme therapy for life now.
I agree. I'm the same way. So anyways, everyone, thanks for tuning in. Take care and we'll see you next week. Bye.